Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
As I said on Inauguration Day, we should never settle for dividing up a shrinking pie or pitting one part of the city against another. Yes, some of our solutions will be hard. Yes, they may involve putting ourselves at risk. And if that means that I sacrifice myself politically, so be it, in pursuit of the right thing.
Damn straight, Lori Lightfoot. Glad you said it. Hope you mean it. I think you mean it. Good evening. Mark Harmon here. Get to be with you till 10 o'clock tonight on 720 WGN. Rick Pearson knows more about this than me, and probably most. He is our, of course, our Sunday spin, Sunday mornings. That's how that works, Sunday spin, Sunday morning, 7 to 9 in the morning, and your Chicago Tribune political reporter. Hi, Rick. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So, hold on. So, Lori Lightfoot's been on the job for
100-some days.
101 days now. She won the election overwhelmingly. She had support of every single aldermanic...
Every ward.
Thank you. And she got up there today, and I thought was saying things that should inspire the city. Look, we've got systemic problems that we're going to tackle. We have a huge shortfall that we're going to have to make tough decisions. None of that is surprising. And she said, as we just played right there, like, look, if I'm going to do what I think is right. And if y'all don't like it, well, then you can get somebody else. But you're giving me the scowl, Rick Pearson.
I'm not giving you a scowl. It's just more of having seen this over the years by various politicians.
So you don't. So you're all about
it. And as you point out, it's 101 days into her tenure. You think anybody's going to remember her saying that?
Sure. I will. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to remember the show. Let me throw out the phone number to you, 312-981-7200. I just would like to know what people, what do you value? What do you want? We can deal it around with Rick in studio here in the first hour of the show. I mean, the city is conducting an online survey right now asking people to weigh in with their fiscal priorities, as well as which taxes they would increase to offset the budget. Like, what are you willing to do? Now, some of us have more money than others, and who can actually contribute? What's important to you, Rick? What do you value for the city going forward? Like, what's the first thing you would tackle?
Well, let's take an overview of this whole speech.
Okay.
One.
Sure.
There's great anticipation for this. Okay. No. And even though she had said it's not going to be the budget address, okay? But still, it's going to be the state of the city address. And what did we really learn that we didn't know before? We have great financial challenges. Yeah, we knew that. To give this speech, I think, does not help her much politically.
Okay.
Because when you give a speech and you present the problems, and sure, every politician's going to blame the past. You know, this is how we got here. We don't care how we got here. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do going forward? That's what we want to know. That's what voters want to know. How is it going to affect them? How is it going to affect their pocketbook? She didn't answer that question. And in fact, she left it kind of a vacuum. And now what you've got are 50 aldermen, 118 Illinois House members, and 59 Illinois state senators to fill the vacuum and take the narrative. It's a fundamental failing of politicians who talk about the problems and don't offer solutions.
Right, but I think she was, correct me if I'm wrong here, but to me it seemed like she was trying to unite the city, get some level of enthusiasm to this is possible.
But you can't rally people to an unknown.
Well,
you can't have a kumbaya moment without something to rally around. I mean, yeah, it's a great city. Rally around that. Okay. But that having been said, to make the changes to get Illinois, to get Chicago out of its financial problems, you have to have specifics that you need the people rallying around. Because whatever gets proposed, there's going to be pushback from. And you need that public support for those individual options, for those solutions.
Well, she said that she doesn't want to shortchange pensions, that this is a debt that this is a that we have signed up for, and she's not going to run for it. Now,
But then she talks about structural change in pensions.
Which makes sense.
Well, what is that?
What it means to me is that if you work for the city for 3.5 years and whatever, it may be 3.5 days a week, and perhaps in the old system you qualified for a pension, you would know this better than me, but we've already
changed the pension rules.
Right, but
for new hires. And the Illinois Supreme Court has ruled that you can't change the benefits of people from when they started on their first day of the job. And that was a unanimous ruling by the Illinois Supreme Court. So what structural changes are you talking about when it comes to pensions?
What could she do?
It's very limited. It's completely limited. I mean, when Illinois tried this, and it was rejected by the state Supreme Court because the Illinois Constitution expressly prohibits diminishing or impairing the contract benefits for public workers. Says it right there. It's in the Constitution. People say, oh, well, let's have a constitutional amendment and change that. Well, sure, go ahead and change it. But you know what? There's federal contract law, ex post facto. You cannot change those benefits. It can only affect future employees. So there isn't a heck of a lot you can do there, except, yeah, folks, I mean, sorry, we're going to have to pay this thing. And she's absolutely right. The deficit is a result of, the fact of the city, as well as the state and its $133 billion pension deficit of not paying its employer share.
Well, right. So we dug the grave and we're going to have to pay ourselves our way out of it.
Yes. And it's going to take a long time.
And it's going to take a long time. But to your point, that there we have made changes as far as what it looks like go forward. Look, I'm just looking at, let's look at 50 years, man. What does Chicago look like there? I we're seeing that those of us who are living in it right now are going to have to take the brunt of what has happened the last 50 years before us.
Sure. And under the way the pension payments are structured and the ramp that is used to pay, plus attrition of these people going forward, as cold as that sounds, we're going to be at a different place 50 years from now.
Right. And I would, listen, I would love it to be great for me and for you, but...
Well, I'm not sure I'll be seeing that in 50 years.
Right, exactly. But maybe at least for people's
kids. Sure. We'll leave it for my kids, yes.
Kids absolutely. And grandkids. Like, listen, we're in this, so how best to move it forward rather than continue to kick the can down the road?
Absolutely. And everybody knows these pension payments have to be made. I mean, we've gone, Pritzker even talked in his first state budget about wanting to delay payments and had overwhelming pushback from everybody, and it's like, no, you've got to make these payments. We can't keep doing this anymore. And that's one thing we really have learned from the time when these pension benefits were granted to the time now. Well, the people when they granted those benefits weren't looking at the long term. They weren't putting the money in, and it's like, well, that's going to be somebody else's problem. Well, here we are, folks. It's all of our problem.
Right, which is sick and disgusting, and they're taking care of their friends or their family members or whoever, and it's just, it's not right, and somebody's got to sit there and draw a line and be like, this is not happening anymore, and I don't know how much she can do, but it feels like she's going to do everything that she can to get us into some level of integrity.
It's just, I don't know that there's much of anything. I mean, it's almost like having a conversation both ways, where she promises to make these pension payments that are due and guaranteed and owed, but then talks about on a bunch of her speech about how much these pensions cost and talks about structural reform. There isn't a lot of structural reform that can be done.
All right, let's come back then, and let me see if we can get in a little excitement. I'm looking for some excitement here, but
I'll give you some excitement.
Okay, great.
Out of this speech.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes.
And maybe, I don't know if it's around the foundational shift in how we're going to use our money, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on that as well, so we can hit that coming on back here. Hey, Get Real in the Morning with Larry Pottis, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV Morning News team. That's weekdays 4 until 10, 312-981-7200. Reactions to the speech. What's important to you with Chicago going forward, whether you live in the city or not? It's 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman has the night off. Mark Harmon in with you till 10 o'clock tonight. We'll talk about some sober sobriety for some young women coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Rick Pearson is with me right now. Sunday Spin, Chicago Tribune's political reporter, as Mayor Lori Lightfoot gave her, I thought, her rallying speech today to bring us together for some level of enthusiasm. What was the title of this speech? Because it wasn't a budgetary speech, because that's coming up in October.
State of the City.
State of the City speech. Okay.
But you know, here we're talking about the obligation to provide solutions or whatever. This is how, you know, basically she said this closing in the speech. We don't have a moment to lose.
We don't.
Now is the time.
I believe that.
The time for what?
The wealth.
Well, I mean, okay, if now is the time, we don't have a moment to lose, what are we supposed to do? Okay, Mayor, tell us what you want us to
do. She talked about having a foundational shift in how we use our money. Okay, what do you read into that?
I will tell you what I noted in this 24-page speech that should be of concern not only to Chicagoans, but perhaps primarily to suburbanites that work in the city of Chicago.
Okay.
We are exploring revenue options to address rampant congestion that solves the problems of traffic, pollution, and other issues while simultaneously bringing in a fair source of funding. A congestion tax.
Okay.
A motorist congestion tax.
So you're saying if you're driving the Edens, if you're driving 355, you're going to be paying taxes to get on?
Think London.
Yep, think London. Rush hour of varying tax levels for the privilege of driving into the city to go to work.
Don't hate it.
What do you think of that one?
I don't hate it. Listen, if you want to drive in prime time,
okay,
and you can afford it, all right. It's going to cost you a little extra to go from 4 until 6. I mean, that sucks. I get it.
Toll booths at the old post office.
Listen, there's no... You're looking for solutions. You're looking for ways through. I don't know if... In my mind, it's like, I would love to hear, like, this will not last forever. Of course, that's never the case.
That's like tollways, right?
I don't necessarily hate that. At the end of the day, as far as all the options on the table... I mean, there could be worse. The other thing is that it seems to me, I mean, she made a very clear, we need to get this casino in the city. We lose $200 million to Indiana. From my standpoint, yes, let us have the casino. If people are going to gamble, they're going to gamble. If they really want to go over to Hammond, they're going to go. I understand it's a little bit harder. And so I would like to think you would take some of the money to support the Gamblers Anonymous, to get people, whoever, get hooked. A lot of times the people that are spending money in said casino are the people that really can't afford it.
Well, the problem is, one, you're not going to get a casino up and running in time to have any dramatic effect on this budget deficit. That's number one. Number two...
Not worried about that. Play the long game.
Okay. Number two is the fact that after the consultant's report for the Illinois Gaming Board that analyzed city casino locations, taxes, basically came to the conclusion that no casino operator would want to have a piece of a Chicago casino because the taxation is so onerous that they could not profit from it, which is part of her allusion in the speech to coming back down to Springfield, and she talked about it as part of the casino issue as well, of getting changes in taxation rates to try to make a Chicago casino more attractive.
I would think there's got to be ways where they could get creative that would make that thing attractive. Somebody's going to want to own a casino in the city of Chicago, I would think.
Yes, I think, but... Casinos are not the great panacea that a lot of people see them to be, that people think sometimes that casinos drive economic development. And there's been a lot of talk about casinos in economically deprived areas. But there is not a lot of economic development at a other than the casino itself.
Right, no,
that's jobs. People go in.
Right,
and they come out. No, they don't question. Hang around the neighborhood.
No question. All right, here, let's get some calls in here. 312-981-7200. What'd you think of the speech today from Lori Lightfoot? Do you feel better about Chicago, the same, worse? What would you like to see moving forward? Let's get Paul from Plainfield in here on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Paul. You're on with Rick Pearson.
Hey, so one of the things that I saw in the speech is that the mayor is talking out of both sides of her mouth. Tonight she was talking about cutting spending and really putting the city on a better financial future. But in the negotiations with the teachers union, she's giving them everything they want, and they still rejected the offer.
She's not talking about closing down schools. She's not talking about structural reform with the teacher contract, such as, you know, paying part of the teacher's pension.
I'm going to put you on hold, Paul, because you're doing some weird, like...
Bad sell in Plainfield
R2-D2-C-3PO tonight. Action there, but go, why don't you respond to the teachers?
Yeah, well, and that issue, of course, was not part of this discussion. The still unresolved facts of having to cut deals with the teachers union, police union, firefighters union. None of that was discussed here. And, yeah, there's a lot of issues surrounding the Chicago teachers union contract. The teachers, I think it was... 16% 4 years was the last offer on the table by the city, but the teachers want other items included in there, including issues involving staffing, library, psychologists on site, those kinds of support kind of staff. They want that as built in as part of the contract, and there's still going to be a lot of give and take going on over that issue. So, yeah, I mean, school closures in the current atmosphere in this city, I think are very unlikely.
All right, coming up after 7:30, I want to talk about Tamika Puckett with you, who was hired as the chief risk officer, whether you think that is something that feels right to you. Also, aldermanic prerogative, which Mayor Lori Lightfoot was very clear that she is not on board with that any longer. So let's get a check of news in 2 minutes, 720 WGN.
And importantly, we are pursuing a Chicago casino that creates a dedicated revenue stream to pay for our pension cost. If we get the tax structure right, this will represent a structural solution to address long-term problems, not a one-time fix. Not only that, it will also create thousands of jobs, help fund the state's capital plan, and stop the flow of over $200 million in gaming revenue to Indiana.
Casino and marijuana, and we've got them. Chicago.
Not yet.
But seemingly on the way. 720 WGN. My name is Mark Carmen. Justin Kaufman is off tonight. Rick Pearson joining me, the Chicago Tribune political writer and, of course, host of the Sunday Spin, as we're going through Mayor Lori Lightfoot's speech today, which I was excited about.
I still haven't tempered that enthusiasm.
You haven't. you have not been a ray of sunshine, but you've been a joy to be with all at the same time, Rick Pearson. What do you think of what you said about aldermanic prerogative? That is over. You can't just say I'm spending this money because it's my choice. I'm the alderman.
Hasn't happened. She ran on it. She's talked about it. It's not going to happen.
You don't think it'll happen?
I think there might be some limited give back on this but as far as,
wouldn't that have universal support from the city? Wouldn't 85% of people that live in Chicago want that?
I don't know, because one, I don't know that they know exactly what it means and what it entails.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I mean, basically, this entails everything from your zoning, which is the big thing. And that's the part that gets the attention, is the aldermanic control over zoning. But there are issues, community issues, that a zoning department in Chicago isn't necessarily, you know, aware of, and what's going out in the neighborhood.
Yeah, but isn't it a way to hide taking care of your friends in some monetary way that they can never really be true?
Well, but see, there you want to talk about reform, then that should be a reform on campaign funding and campaign finance. I mean, that could be one way to try to offset this issue, because, yeah, certainly everybody's looking like, yeah, you want a zoning change? I got to kick some to the alderman.
Right.
So take away that ability to do that in a that is in a legal way of giving campaign contributions.
Now, is that at all realistic that that could ever be supervised properly so that would not go on and so that they would you wouldn't meet in an alley and say, here's your money?
Well, you're never going to stop the meeting in the alley, here's your money, unless it's law enforcement. But that's not to say that hasn't gone on for a long time that way.
Right. Right. Okay. I'm losing momentum here for my enthusiasm. What do you, Tamika Puckett got named today, Chief Risk Officer.
This was also something that she campaigned on. And frankly, this was something that made a lot of good sense of hiring a risk management officer. The city's self-insured, but it has nobody that really is in charge of what are the actual risks that the city faces in that self-insurance. And for somebody to kind of, you know, every company has a chief risk operations officer. I mean, any large organization has one. City didn't have one. They would just pay claims.
Well, one of the things that, you know, just listening to how she everything was surmised as far as what the actual budget deficit is, well, it's a lot higher because the stock market is now going down. I think the stock market, now this is just me talking, I don't know anything, right? Everybody understands that, but I think the stock market could go down a lot more. It seems to me that things
are... see, you're one of those guys. Now, you're calling me the negative. You're talking about potential recession here.
Well, sure,
that's something absolutely you have to figure in.
Right.
And, but obviously, the market has its ups and downs, and people, when they are looking at the market for rate of return for things like investments to pay pensions, which has been a problem because of the downturn in the market, that the city owes more. But they're normally calculated over a multi-year period, so you kind of smooth out the ups and downs to get a more accurate picture.
312-981-7200 is the phone number here. That's fair enough. That we can play the long game on the market, too, and not worry about how it's affecting the budget year by year. A lot of texts coming in here, Rick. Can't wait to see the number of homes that go up for sale after tonight's speech. It's so sad what the unions and lobbyists and BS artists have done to the city and state. No one's putting, at least in my mind, I don't think anyone's putting their home up for sale this evening. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I'm not sure what she said that would want to get you to put your home up for sale, except for pushing the real estate transfer tax increase, because that's only paid on home sales. And that's something she had also talked a long time about for as a potential source of money to fund homeless programs. Originally, it was going to be a tax affecting homes of over a $1 million in sales price. Now she's lowered that to about $500,000. I think that might be just a bargaining position right now, and that number may change. But as I said earlier, that's got to be something that Springfield looks at, and I'm not so sure that that's any kind of automatic to allow the city to do that.
So you have a condo in whatever in River North, and you're going to move out to the suburbs, and you're going to sell your condo, and you're going to get $623,000 for it. Under what she's proposing, what's going to happen now? You're going to get taxed another $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000.
I'm not sure what the rate increase she was looking at, because now, I mean, she was looking at one rate at $1 million, and I'm not sure what rate she's looking at now for $500,000. Also not clear from this is whether she's also talking about lowering the existing real estate transfer tax for properties under $500,000 in sales.
Okay. She talked about no water shutoffs. I don't think anybody has a problem with that, correct?
No, that's, I mean, and That was an early step that went in. That no,
and for those who don't know, water shows not that's for somebody who cannot afford to pay their water bill.
Delinquent water bills.
We're not going to turn off the water on those people. I think I would hope we were all on board on that.
No, that and you know, making the point too about making some adjustments with the fines in regards to motor vehicles, that you don't lose your driver's license or your car for non-payment of you know, I mean, how many places still have a city sticker anymore?
Right.
That's kind of an outmoded way of also taxation, but the city relies on outmoded ways of taxation.
Well, that's the biggest pain, right? Just for somebody who lives in the city. I mean, I live in the city, so I got my city sticker. All right. I pay $4 an hour to park in most any part of the city.
At least.
At least. Okay. It's $6.50 around here an hour.
Right.
Okay.
Plus tax.
And that's now.
And a lot that for the tax that goes to the city.
Right. And that's private equity now, the parking, because we sold off the parking.
Right. That's what she meant earlier about problems with cities, municipalities having to sell assets off to make up for some of these costs, but she's made it adamant we're not looking at selling any more assets.
Well, as we never should have. I mean, do we not point the finger right at Mayor Daley and say this is you absolutely you ruined the city doing this? Right?
Well, I wouldn't say ruined the city.
You greatly impacted the city in a negative way by going for short term game and thinking about yourself.
Well,
is that fair?
But it was supposed to be long term. Remember that was supposed to be a revenue source that just went on and on and on and was spent
in a day.
Yes,
seemingly.
To avoid raising property taxes.
Right. So at least what I heard today was at least somebody that did not want to kick the can down the road any further than we have already done that. Now, how she's going to get through everything that's going on here, to your point, there was not a concrete plan laid out. But I guess what I'm aligning with.
Yeah, but except I don't know that, and again, this was a very highly public televised speech and all of that.
Sure.
But I don't know that. This is the same Lori Lightfoot that was on the campaign trail. I mean, she's not saying anything really that we didn't already know. And her job was to be elected and at tough and challenging times to get things done. And I mean, even Governor Pritzker's office, they issued a statement that in the weeks ahead, as Chicago pursues assistance from the legislature, it will be important for the mayor to reach out to leaders and lawmakers across the state and across the aisle to build a coalition for her ideas. Her ideas. They don't know what she's talking about. I mean, when she came down to Springfield in May, the month before, right around weeks before the end of session, and was talking about, after getting elected, wanting to put a face of Chicago in Springfield, and then she talked about, we got to go right now, and we got to start getting things going for the city. The city's finances have a lot of problems. I talked to many legislators, and we're getting down to crunch time, the end of May, spring session, and I said, "So, what was the mayor's ask? What do they want?" Well, they just were just generic. They there wasn't any specific.
Well, I think she's getting her ducks in a row. Is that fair to say?
Well, no, I don't think it's fair to say either, because I think we would have heard specifics if she had been actively cultivating aldermen.
All right, let's get a couple, three more specifics on the other side of a quick little timeout here, and then we'll let you go celebrate the speech somewhere.
Celebrate the speech.
I'll see you at the Billy Goat at 10. All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN.
Now, there are limits to what any mayor can do alone to generate revenue. We have and will continue to explore every reasonable option. And reasonable, to me, means relieving the financial burden on those least able to afford it and not driving business out of Chicago. These two principles will guide my decision-making about revenue options.
It's the Mayor Lori Lightfoot, State of Chicago, her first speech addressing what we're dealing with, 101 days in office. Mark Carman with you. Rick Pearson sitting in for the rest of the 7 o'clock hour. She also talked about today, Rick, eliminating $1.4 billion in short-term lending, where we are just, please give us money, we'll pay you a huge rate, and then we'll figure out how we're going to pay that whenever the hell we figure out how we're going to pay that.
Yeah, I mean, we had some various controversial ways of cash flow that existed for the last several years. Things by such, one of my favorite phrases, scoop and toss kind of thing. But
give me that money, I'll give you 20% on it. I need to pay XYZ.
Right, I mean,
come on, man.
I mean, we are in a better kind of cash flow situation despite our financial issues, so that we aren't as reliant on those kind of speculative. I mean, basically, it's like a variable rate interest plus penalty type situation.
Right. And I forgot about the penalty part of that,
right,
too. really nice. Good plan.
Yeah, well,
glad we were doing that. I mean, come on.
So we didn't raise property taxes.
Right. Well, we've done that now.
And we haven't seen the last of it. Despite the mayor's careful words of trying to avoid it, there really is not a significant way around it.
And she basically said that, too. Like, look, if we can't do it this way, then...
Well, but see, that's what... She's always holding out. Well, if we can't do this. The fact is, it doesn't matter. Anything that gets done, there will be a property tax component that's included in it. Sorry.
Sweet. What about the hiring freeze that was put in August 20th?
Kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, a bunch of this is under the rubric of trying to, and she touched on this, of trying to show good faith to the people who are going to be asked to pony up more by here are some of the steps that we've been doing. Hiring freeze, I think, is interesting only in the fact of where does that affect the cops? And with all of the attention in her first 100 days, not just on her performance, but also what about gun-related violence in the city? How does that play into her first 100 days, her relationship with Eddie Johnson, as well as, you know, the desire, I think, from a lot of people to try to have more cops on the street?
Well, that's... I think that there is large-scale support, if needed, to have more police officers on the street to make Chicago safer. Also, to partner with the communities at the same time. So there is a relationship there. That would be my hope, at least.
And to offset the need for the outrageous amounts of overtime pay that were being paid.
And that she talked about overtime pay as well. She also talked about... by 2021, which is right around the corner, minimum wage being $15.
Right.
So now people are like, am I going to have to pay $15 for my turkey sandwich at lunch?
Well, you're seeing, I mean, and this is kind of being phased in, and you're seeing some price inflation to try to cope with wage inflation. The question is, I think, even the employers here in the city, including in the fast food industry, were well aware that this was something that was going to happen and had already kind of phased it in. That's for one reason why you're seeing things like kiosks to order from at restaurants.
Which is another thing that is, I think, very much in our face. Not that I don't know if everybody's talking about, but just how much we're going to have a part of the workforce that is no longer going to exist. And as we go further down the, you know,
right.
Truck drivers in 10 years.
Oh, well, that's...
Are you going to be driving a truck? Probably not.
Well, and I think, you know, that goes to a larger and that's a more universal question in this country.
Of course.
You know, I had neglected to figure out just how much of farming is automated because it just struck me as, you know, but you can run a combine 24 hours a day,
right?
You hook it up to GPS. It doesn't need lights
and it doesn't complain,
right.
And it doesn't
and you're controlling it with a joystick on your laptop, you know, in your home. But this goes to a much larger question of where this nation's economy is headed.
Yep.
And in fact, that's why you have people like Andrew Yang, one of the myriad Democratic contenders, talking about universal income,
which I think is a very interesting platform that he's running that people aren't ready for. We may see that day come.
But I think that's why you're hearing about it now, is because you're seeing these segments of industry that are just going to become virtually totally automated.
Right. Which is, hey, listen, for the record, minimum wage $15, Mark Harmon, I'm on board. People should be able to have, if you're working, you should have a livable wage. We shouldn't be able to pay you as little as possible just because you need a job and
you'll do it.
Right. That's not the value system that I think that this city should be living under. So I support the fact that she's doing that. Now, it could mean that you are paying more for things, and then there's a cost to that too. But hopefully, the service that you're getting is going to be well worth it, and you have a better city to live in.
And the issue of, you know, for the greater good,
right?
And in lieu of what you may be paying for, you know, maybe the price of that hamburger goes up a little bit, offset that against what you're paying in taxes for things like trying to take care of the homeless, for emergency health care costs, those kinds of issues.
Yeah. And as far as that cheeseburger goes, we might have to eat a little bit less of those, team. Maybe just might have to have a little bit less. We all should be reductionists here.
Might try one of those, non-meat ones.
How about a non-meat?
Or the non-meat chicken.
Non-meat chicken.
Have you seen that?
I haven't seen the non-meat chicken.
KFC is starting to roll out.
You know, I did.
You try an Impossible?
No, but I did try the Popeyes chicken sandwich.
Oh, you found one. Okay.
Yeah, I was out in front of that one. I tried Popeyes, Wendy's, Popeyes chicken sandwich was unbelievable.
It won, huh?
Yeah, it won in a landslide. All right, Rick. This was a journey. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to dismiss your optimism, but
you're not, and I think that. Listen, I don't know how much he's going to be able to do to all the points you've made tonight, but where she seems to be coming from, as far as from my perspective, I think it's a win of who Chicago has in office right now.
You said a journey?
Yeah.
So let's consider this day one of the journey.
Okay.
And let's see where it goes from here.
Okay. We're going to reconvene. Justin Kaufman's going to be off a year from now this night, and we're going to reconvene, and we're going to have this conversation again.
We'll just play back the same tape.
That's not going to be the case. You're going to say, Carmen, you know what? You were right to be just at least a little bit optimistic. Let's hope I'm sure you're on board.
Look, we all want what's best for
right.
the city.
No
it's
doubt.
Just
no
a matter
doubt.
Of, yeah, it's going to be a journey to see how we get there.
Thanks for taking the time.
Mark, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, quick timeout. There's breaking news at Soldier Field. We'll find out what that is coming up after the 8 o'clock news, 720 WGN.
I mean, I feel a lot more confident. I mean, getting all the reps and hitting some balls and... I mean, I feel a lot more confident. Yeah, more relaxing, knowing I don't have to ask Kelly, hey, are you going or am I going? And just, you know, in that crazy chaos, I knew every kick was going to be mine, so it was good.
Uh-oh. That is the Bears kicker for the moment. His name is Eddie Pinero. Thanks again to Rick Pearson for sitting in with me for the first hour talking about Mary Lightfoot.
Eddie just missed one.
Another one?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Thanks to Rick for talking Mary Lori Lightfoot speech with me. But we got to go to Soldier Field right now because Eddie Pinero has a chance to be the Bears kicker, but this is the final preseason game. You may not know there's football tonight because... Lord knows none of the starters are playing. But Adam Hoge is still working hard and watching kicks go awry, including extra points. Adam, are we in crisis mode? Please tell me what's going on.
No, that kick that was just missed was the Titans kicker. So everyone can breathe easy. It was not Eddie Pinero.
Good try by Jennings. Okay, but he did miss an extra point, which is 33 yards, and that's not good.
Yeah, no, that was ugly. That's about as ugly as a kick as I've seen in a long time. But I think his plant foot slipped a little bit, and he just shanked it straight to the left. So I don't know if you give him a pass on it or not. He did come back and hit a 32-yarder, and then he hit a 39-yarder just a few minutes ago. So, hey, look, considering the only thing I wanted to see tonight was the kicker, it's been very entertaining so far. I'm not saying it's been great for the Bears because he didn't miss an extra point, but I'm for a fourth preseason game, I'm finding it quite entertaining.
I did not think we were going to call it tonight, and then I saw on Twitter that the Bears kicker missed an extra point, and I'm like, all right, I got to text Hogue and see what's going on, or the dude's missing. This is amazing. I think it's possible that the Bears have actually created, and perhaps this is not – you know, whatever, you're a professional.
By the way, Carm, I'm glad that you're only calling me because there was a missed kick.
Well, I figured that we could delve into your rewatching of every play of Mitchell Trubisky another night because you were at the game.
No. Let's just do the kicks.
No, we'll get to that. We're going to get to that, too, and I want to talk Jay Cutler coming to Soldier Field as well. So there's a lot on the table here. But
okay.
I'm just wondering, you know, it's sort of like my philosophy with going and playing for the Cubs before they won a World Series. There was more pressure to wear that uniform because they hadn't won for so long. And I think that's almost applying to the Bears kicker now because you're stepping into just the absolute pressure of this dude missed the kick. We might have won the Super Bowl, even though, of course, it was, you know, a first-round playoff game. But anyway, I think there's a lot of pressure on that position for anyone who's doing it.
No, I mean, I think there's some truth to what you're saying. I think, look, any kicker in the National Football League always has pressure because the bottom line is if you make kicks, you're going to lose your job because that is your only job. So, I mean, you get a little leeway here and there if it's, you know, you're missing from 50-plus. But to me, I mean, really anything under 45 should be close to automatic, if not automatic. So if you're having these missed kicks, and by the way, three kickers in the NFC North tonight, Eddie Pinheiro, Corey Vedvik in Minnesota, and Mason Crosby, the Packers kicker, have all missed kicks tonight under 38 yards. So it's not just a problem for the Bears, and these are all kind of pressure-packed situations I think these kickers are in. But I do think there's some truth to what you're saying, and especially given the way the Bears have handled this all offseason, not only have they had a competition from start to finish, but, you know, they're showing the Cody Parkey missed 43-yarder in meetings when these guys get to Hallis Hall for the first time.
Like, come
on. Trying to add the – but they're trying. I don't understand people who criticize it because you need to learn how to kick with pressure. And so the Bears are trying to add as much pressure as possible without being to simulate, not being able to simulate the atmosphere that's going to be here next Thursday night, which is completely different than anything these kickers have faced from the very start of this competition.
I mean, should we, like, have Todd Manley and Mary Sandberg and I don't know, bring down everybody else, Larry Wirt, to stand outside the studio before we walk in? You better do a good show today. You better do a good show today. There's a lot of pressure on you. I mean, I don't quite get why you have to show a replay of Cody Parkey. Where is Cody Parkey? Is he even kicking in whatever football leagues are out there? Because I don't think he's on an NFL roster.
No, he's not. He's in Florida, and he's doesn't have a job. And part of that has to do with how he handled the situation after he missed a kick.
Don't go on the Today Show, dude.
Yeah, I mean, this is different, though, than operating a radio station. It's not a apples-to-apples comparison. I mean, like, if your only job, Carm, was to do the traffic, and they played a traffic report that was completely botched from start to finish, maybe they would play that as, here's something not to do when you do the traffic report. So,
listen, this
just make the kick.
I'm just saying that if we applied that to any other walk of life, you see the last sales guy, you see how he was on this call, don't be like this. Like, why don't we just, you know, uplift the guy? All right. Did they make the right decision with Eddie Pinheiro? Was that the right call in your mind?
Well, we'll see if that's the final decision. I mean, if he misses another kick tonight, there's still, you know, 2.5 quarters left here. They might have some tougher decisions to make. But I think from what I've seen from all the kickers that have been here, and especially, you know, once it was narrowed down to Eddie Pinheiro and Elliott Fry, I think Eddie Pinheiro has a stronger leg. I liked his demeanor a little bit. I hate putting too much stock in that, but he seems to carry a little bit more confidence with him. And maybe that's misleading just because he's a little bit more candid and outspoken than Elliott, who is a little bit quieter. So maybe that shouldn't be held against Elliott Fry. But, you know, I like, for the most part, what both of these kickers did. The only thing that bothered me was that they never really had perfect days. But Pinheiro did go 12 for 12 here at the family night a few weeks ago. He's missed two kicks pretty bad here in the game since then, which is somewhat alarming, I would think. But look, hey, with everything that's been in front of us, the options that have been in front of us, the kicks that have been in front of us, this is the best option from everything the Bears have looked at, other than if you're one of those people who thinks they should just go out and sign Matt Bryant for a lot of money, who, by the way, I believe worked out for the Falcons or is going to work out for the Falcons tomorrow.
I mean, you're trying to win a Super Bowl. Maybe you got to pay the kicker. Maybe it makes sense to bring in Matt Bryant. I don't know. Who gave Jay Cutler tickets to opening night against the Packers?
Well, don't you think Jay Cutler has access to tickets?
I don't know. I in my mind, I hope he had to go on StubHub and buy them.
Well, maybe. Okay. Well, he certainly has the money to do that. Maybe he had to do that.
Like, did he call up, hey, Ryan Pace, it's Jay. Can I get 2 or make that 4, actually? Kristen wants to bring some friends for Thursday night against Green Bay. I wonder how that went down. Am I the only one that's interested in that?
No, I mean, I guess I don't really care how he got the tickets, but I think this does lead to a bigger discussion about why isn't Jay Cutler more embraced by this franchise? I thought it was a little odd that one of your best quarterbacks in your franchise's history wasn't at the Bears 100 celebration. Why was he not there?
Because he was a pain in the behind, Adam Hoge. No one.
Oh, you don't think that other players who were there were pains in the butt too?
I think Jay has his own category. Like he just. He's about as, I mean, I know there's like maybe like a, I don't know, 37% of Bears fans who still like Jay Cutler, and they would really want to see him at the Bears 100 celebration, and you can make the argument, I suppose, Jay Cutler's the best quarterback in the history of this franchise, which is just an argument that should not be made, but you can have it strictly by the numbers. It is interesting that he's saying that is he really going to sit in the seats? Like, can you imagine if you just show up to Bears-Packers, you're fired up, and Cuddy's to your right, and, hey, Jay, can I get you a beer?
I'm just saying, I think when we get farther and farther removed from the Jay Cutler playing era, this guy has personality. He's to me, he's still entertaining. He was not nearly as bad as he was made out to be in this city. He certainly wasn't great. He certainly didn't live up to the trade. But there's no reason that this guy should be, like, banned from the Bears like Sammy Sosa is from the Cubs. There's absolutely no logic there. And I don't understand why a few years removed, if the guy wants to come to a Bears game, a Bears-Packer game, because he likes football, and he may very well be analyzing football on television next year, then the guy has a right. He still considers Chicago a home. Kristen's from here. They can come to a Bears game without everyone getting so upset about it.
I don't, listen, I'm not upset. I just think he should have had to buy his own ticket. I think it's great that he wants to come watch the Bears, and he loves Matt Nagy's offense, and he wants to be at Soldier Field. And I hope he's reading Adam Hoge's Bears blog on WGNRadio.com and reading about Mitchell Trubisky's every single play from last year. How long did that take you to do, by the way?
Oh, I started it in January, so a very, very long time. Let me be clear, it's not like I was working on it constantly every day since January, but it most days.
Everybody should read this. It's a phenomenal read. You did great work, Adam Hoge, but for those who have not read it yet, what was your biggest takeaway?
Well, the whole point of the exercise was to go back and watch the entire body of work, right? So many people have all these opinions on Mitchell Trubisky. And I think doing what I did made me realize why some of the negativity that comes nationally, those that probably didn't watch every single game of Mitch's, let alone every single snap, I came away seeing, okay, why some people think his accuracy can't be cured. He's just not making the right decision. He's just not good. Some people believe that. I think when you step back and you watch the entire body of work like I did, you also see the bare side of it, which is he did get better throughout the season. As he became more comfortable with the offense, he made better decisions. His accuracy did improve, and he became a really good quarterback on third down and late in games compared to the beginning of the season when he was good early and would struggle down the stretch of games. So to me, that showed a lot of improvement and does make me buy what the Bears are selling right now, which is as he gets in the second year of this offense, as he gets more and more comfortable with the library of plays that Matt Nagy always refers to, that he should be better this year, both in terms of accuracy, mechanics, decision-making, all of those things. And is he ever going to be as good as Patrick Mahomes? Are we ever going to be able to say that the Bears made the right decision to draft him over Patrick Mahomes? I don't know. I mean, even I'm leaning towards probably not at this point. Certainly the evidence of last year shows that Patrick Mahomes is the better quarterback. But I do think there's a lot left to be determined here with all of these quarterbacks, including Deshaun Watson that was drafted in the same draft. And I do think it's certainly within the realm of possibilities that Mitchell Trubisky ends up being a very, very good quarterback for the Bears for many years.
Well, fingers crossed that it happens, and looking forward to the season, and they definitely got the pick wrong, but that doesn't mean that the franchise is doomed for it. He can be good enough that they can win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that's and hey, listen, and it's a hard job, and they believed in Mitchell Trubisky, traded up to get him and all of it, and hopefully it will work out for them. At least, can he kick? Because I would throw that in the mix, because why not?
And by the way, Carm, nobody knew Mahomes was going to be this good. Otherwise, Cleveland would have taken him number one. I mean, that's what also needs to be part of this discussion. There were teams that thought he had potential, but he needed a lot of coaching. He got that coaching, and guess who he got it from? Matt Nagy. So that's part of the reason why Mahomes was so good last year, and part of the discussion of why many think Trubisky can take the next step this year under Nagy's leadership.
I'll say it again, fingers crossed that he does, and then I'll also say this. If you lined up the resumes of Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and Mitchell Trubisky, and you just looked at them on a sheet of paper, which is not how things are done, there's no way you would have picked Mitchell Trubisky. Ryan Pace just... I don't want to say he was trying to be smarter than everybody else, but on some level, it feels like he was just trying to be smarter or just put too much stock on the off-season workouts and everything that led up to the draft.
Just to interrupt you there, yeah. If you're just doing it off a resume, then Watson should have gone number one.
Right, right.
Way ahead of Mahomes, which that's wrong, too. So that's not how this process works.
I know.
The guy who probably had the most doubt absolutely was Mahomes, who had a cannon of an arm but had basically nothing consistent with his mechanics, played in a gimmicky offense, who certainly had all the potential in the world, but there was no way to foresee this all coming together the way it does. Usually with those types of players, it doesn't come together. He's the exception, not the rule, to those types of quarterbacks. He's certainly a huge exception, and obviously right now is the best of those three. But I'm just saying, it's hindsight 2020 here, and I think the bottom line is Trubisky still can be very, very good. But for the most part, I do agree with you that 10 years from now, are we going to say he was the right pick over Mahomes? Probably not. That's fair.
Will you call me if Eddie Pinheiro misses another kick?
Sure, if you want me to. You guys call here. I'm working. You guys call me, but I will pick up the phone.
Okay. Thanks, Adam Hogue. Enjoy the rest of the preseason. And yes, the opener is a week from today, so that's going to be awesome.
I can guarantee you that this Bears discussion for the last 15 minutes was way more entertaining than the actual game that's going on right now.
I was worried, like, should I put on a Bears? Should I put on Adam against them? No one's watching the Bears game. No one can. Come on, come on. All right,
I wouldn't advise this strategy next Thursday, but I think it works tonight.
Thank you.
Bye, Carb.
See you later, Adam. Adam Hogue out at Soldier Field. Appreciate his time. Eddie Pinheiro missed a kick. There is. They're gonna find a kicker. They're gonna find a kicker. They're gonna find a kicker. 720 WGN. So we're gonna have a conversation coming up after the 8:30 news about sobriety. Haley Shannon, I think she's. I want to say her title is the president of the Chicago Young Women in Recovery Sober Curious. Well, she's the organizer. I'm uplifting her from organizer to president. Might as well make yourself the president and CEO at this point. But Haley's got a really interesting story going from somebody who was doing the standard drinking and having fun that young people do to deciding in her mid-20s that, you know what, this isn't for me anymore, and started this group, and we've got all these people coming out of the woodworks who are deciding, you know what, drinking's not for me either, and I'd rather be an adult sooner than later. So it'll be a fun conversation, hopefully an inspiring conversation with Haley, and also something that, perhaps if you are of age, you might want to join in the group, or perhaps you might have a daughter or cousin or somebody that you know that you perhaps could put in contact that might benefit from meeting a person like Haley. So that's coming up. I was in New York this week. Just want to get it out here for 90 seconds. I'm like fighting not talking about it because I got to go to do my favorite sporting event of the year, which is the U.S. Open, which is the greatest sporting event there is in this country. Make that this planet. And I love this city. I love everything about Chicago. I love the lakefront. I love the river. I love Uptown. I love River North. I love Andersonville. I love the South Side. But there's something about New York City. I know people don't want to hear it. There's just so much energy, and it's always going on. And I don't know why, but the cheeseburger is just better in New York. The French toast is better in New York. The bagel is better in New York. Maybe it's the water, whatever it is. I mean, I had a bagel and cream cheese. It was amazing. It was worth every bit of the $4.25 I spent for it. Curtis, you want to say something?
Did you find the rainbow bagel that's in New York?
The rainbow bagel, no. But yeah. I went to Levain's Bakery, where they have this enormous chocolate chip cookie with 7,000 chocolate chips and there's nuts in there. It's like the greatest chocolate chip cookie ever. And they got the peanut butter chocolate chip cookie. And again, I love this city. And I hate the Knicks. And I hate the Rangers. And I hate the Mets.
Hate
and I hate
New York
the Yankees.
Pizza.
What?
Do you hate New York pizza?
No. I love New York pizza. I mean, I like Chicago pizza more, but I love New York pizza. New York thin pizza is amazing. I went to John's Pizzeria, established in 1929 on Bleecker Street, right? Bleecker Street's this amazing street. Nonstop, there's the food, and there's the bar, and there's the massage place, and there's the nail salon, and there's the art place, and there's, I mean, it's just incredible. It never stops. I went to John's on Bleecker. I got a large cheese pizza. I was eating at the fish place down the way. I brought in the pizza. I had to put it underneath the table because I didn't want to, you know, my brothers who I was going with, they wanted fish. But I had to have the pizza too. And I'm like, you want a slice of pizza? Of course we want a slice of pizza. So now I'm putting the pizza on the table from underneath. You can do that in New York. You don't do that in Chicago. Maybe people want me to move to New York and say goodbye. Anyway, the U.S. Open was awesome, and I ran into Nick Bollettieri, who's the Bollettieri Academy legendary tennis coach. So I accosted him in the food court. If you want to check out that video, it's on my Twitter at the Carm. All right, quick timeout. David Jennings has your news in 1 minute. 720 WGN. WGN 837. Hope you're having a great Thursday. Mark Kerman with you till 10 o'clock tonight. My friend Haley Shannon is in studio here. She is the founder, the organizer of the Sober Curious Young Women in Chicago meetup group, which is a mouthful and really cool. Haley, welcome to WGN. First up, great to have you.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here.
So this is a journey for you. You were... let's see. You were young and having lots of fun. Right? And you were you started drinking in high school. Yeah. Is that correct? Like a
14,
lot of
14. Young. Yeah.
Okay. So you came from a family that had drinkers.
There was
drinkers
some
in
drinking.
It.
We like to have a good time. Let's put it that way.
So did mom and dad know you were drinking at 14?
Yeah, they knew.
Okay.
Yeah.
And no problem.
I don't know. No, I think they just knew, but we didn't really talk about it much.
Okay. But so like some people come from a home where like the parents are having, we'd rather have you party here than party elsewhere and sort of like.
No, it wasn't like that. I was definitely hiding it.
Okay.
Which I think plays a lot into my larger story.
Okay. And so that continued through college. Where'd you go to college?
I went to St. Mary's College of Notre Dame.
Okay.
In South Bend. And yeah, definitely continued through college and went there because I was like, I can go to Notre Dame football games and party and it'll be a great time. And it was a great time. Those were some fun years, but caught up to me for sure.
Well, yeah, I'm seeing a smile on your face as you even talk about it right now. Like there's part of you that still enjoys that Haley who was enjoying her college years.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think... For me, to just kind of go into it a little bit, I loved to party. I loved being the center of attention. I loved being the person who connected people, knew where the party was, knew just a buzzy social person, I think would be the best way to put it. And I think the drinking really got in the way of that. I think the drinking was an easy way to create that, but at the end of the day, it wasn't something that was serving me. So I quit.
And how old were you when you stopped drinking?
So I was 23 years old when I got sober. I was 1 year out of college living in Chicago, and it was very hard being super young and making that choice. But I just kind of saw my life going down a path that I couldn't keep up with it. I couldn't be a woman that I respected and be a woman that other people respected and go down the path that I was on. And I think I got to a point early on where I had seen enough trouble with drinking that I constantly found myself trying to compare myself to other people and be like, is my drinking normal? Is this normal? Does it just fit in with the social scene that I'm in? But it didn't. I was different, and I very much so consider myself in recovery too now.
And you're how old now?
26.
You're 26 years old.
So I was 3 years sober in May, which was a huge, huge accomplishment for me.
Wow. 312-981-7200 if anybody has a question for Haley or wants to learn about your group. So, okay, you're 23 years old. I'm going to stop drinking. And I'm assuming that you didn't start your group the next day. Like, how did that come to be?
That's an awesome question, Mark. No, it was not the next day. I think I spent that first year really lonely, and that's kind of where the idea for the group came out of it, but not without a lot of self-pity and, oh my gosh, my social life is never going to be the same. I'm never going to have friends again. What does this look like? I'm a young person in Chicago, which is a very drinking heavy city. We all know that. And I think I was about 8 months in, and I had spent probably the Friday nights of the 4 months prior crying to my boyfriend at the time, oh my gosh, I'm going to have no friends. I'm going to have no friends. And I call it my Maya Angelou moment, be the change you want to see in the world. And I just had this thought, like, there's got to be other young women out there going through this. I cannot be the only one. And sure enough, I am not the only one.
No, you're not, Haley. But it is interesting though, because I don't think that many people get to that point in their early 20s or mid 20s, let alone are willing to reach out and like wanting to like find companions / friends. I mean, did you lose? Let's rewind a little bit. Did you lose friends? Like, Haley, what are you doing? How come you're not coming out with us and going to wherever the kids go nowadays? I'm a little bit past it myself, so I don't know where do the kids go nowadays.
I'm a little past that too. I don't know. But no, you took the words right out of some people's mouths. That's exactly, I think, what some of my friends were feeling. And I don't know that I want to call it lost friends as much as my relationships really started to change. And I did stop getting invited to things. And I think that was more on me than it was on anybody else, as much as I started saying no to things. I stopped going to so-and-so's pregame or this birthday dinner or this tailgate, and just the things that I was used to doing and used to saying yes to doing, I said no to for a really long time. I think to really protect my own sobriety at the time, like I was young and I was vulnerable and I was doing something that was really against the grain, and I really needed to protect my choice to stay sober for another day. And with that came a lot of, no, I'm not going to go to that. And I stopped being invited to things. And I did lose some friends.
Yeah. Hey, Haley, do you want to come to opening day? We're tailgating. The White Sox are playing the Tigers. Answer used to be yes, but then you're saying no. And then like the next opening day, they're like, I'm not calling Haley. She's not going to do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
That's not easy.
No, it was really hard.
Yeah. So you get this idea that, okay, I can't be alone here. So then what was your next step in the process of starting this group?
So my first step actually was I had been connected to a couple other young women that were considering not drinking through friends. So I'd had one or two people that I kind of knew were going down a similar path. So I was like, okay, there's other people out there. But my first step actually was I'm not somebody that did a 12-step program by any means, but I went to an AA meeting because I was like, where do you go to find people who don't drink?
And right.
You go to AA. So I actually walked into an AA meeting and I saw this girl sitting across the room who looked kind of like me. She was blonde, young looking girl. And I marched up to her after the meeting and I was like, what's your name? We're going to be friends. And she was like, okay. She's since moved away from Chicago, but she was kind of my partner in crime of like, we're not alone in this. We've got to do something. And she really helped me. I kind of had the idea of like, there's got to be a group or there's got to be something. And I was searching the internet, and Meetup is a common app that people use for organizing and socializing in it's prominently in big cities where it's really active. So I had seen some things on Meetup, but there was nothing that was really consistent and active. And I really wanted something that was consistently going on. So I was like, I don't see anything. And the other thing that's important for me to mention is, I know we just talked about this, but I was really young when I got sober, and I wanted to create a space for other young people, specifically young women. And I saw that as a gap. There was really no groups focused towards that. So I was like, I think there's a space for this.
Well, normally when people talk about gaps, they're talking about filling it up and making dollars alongside that. You know what? Nobody's selling this, so I'm going to create this, then I'm going to get rich. You're not doing this for any financial gain, are you?
No.
Which is cool if you are, by the way. I mean,
financial gain at all, just social gain.
So when do you guys meet?
We meet the second Friday of every month at the Whole Foods in Lincoln Park.
it's a amazing
great spot. There's a big upstairs seating area. And we've been doing that consistently since February of 2018. So it's been over a year.
So how many people show up?
So it's a little deceiving. The Meetup group app says there's 400 plus people in the group. And for the first 3 to 6 months, probably we were getting 8 to 10-ish women. The Chicago Tribune actually did an article about the group, and after that came out, we spiked, and I was getting 35 to 40 people for 2 or 3 months, and now we've tapered off. There's probably 15 to 20 on a consistent basis that come every month to be with us.
What's the standard person's coming for the first time? They walk in. I'm assuming they're have a little look of fear on their face, perhaps? I mean, like, who are these people?
Absolutely. It's usually a girl walking in by herself, looking around, looking for somebody that looks like them. And I like to really create a welcoming atmosphere. So I usually stand up and kind of scan around and be like, are you looking for us? Because just, I think about it, and it's marketed as a sober curious group. I just said, I'm in recovery, so I definitely identify as somebody who has struggled with alcohol dependency and we'll never drink again. But there's a lot of people that truly are sober curious, and I think this group wouldn't have the success that it has if it wasn't sober curious, because you never know where somebody's at on their journey. They could be thinking about their relationship with alcohol from a health standpoint. They could be thinking about getting pregnant. They could have, like, they could be training for a marathon. There's just so many different reasons. They might not like feeling hungover. They might be somebody who has struggled with drugs, and alcohol is just the first thing they want to attack. I mean, the spectrum is so large, and I think it's so important to create a space for all of those people.
You want to stick around for just a couple more minutes?
Yeah.
Great. All right, quick time out here. 312-981-7200. If you have a question for Haley, it is 720 WGN. We're talking about not drinking. That's right. I know it's confronting. 720 WGN. Mark Carman with you till 10 o'clock tonight. I believe Pete McMurray is warming up in the bullpen somewhere. I saw David Hochberg around here. He's going to be on with Pete. Haley Shannon is on with me right now. She's the founder, the organizer of the Sober Curious Young Women in Chicago Meetup Group. They meet on the second Friday at the Whole Foods
Lincoln Park.
In Lincoln Park. Do you guys steal food off of the hot bar?
No, we buy all of our food and bring them lots of business.
See, I see. There was a story recently where somebody put like spaghetti in their pants, and then it ended up burning their leg and other things.
That was
and
not one of us.
It's good to hear. So I'm just thinking of like my own like things that I talk about giving up. Right, I've never been an alcoholic or somebody who's even gone out, and I've never, like, I think I've been drunk like once in my life, but
I don't know many people like you.
I'm one of those people, but I do think like, okay, maybe I could cut out alcohol completely for one, or I could, you know, whatever, eat less meat just for my own health. And I like to be environmentally conscious. I could, there's a million other things. I love sweets and just like, what would my life look like if I couldn't have my chocolate chip cookies that I was talking about from Levain's Bakery early? And so I, you know, and then I think, well, it wouldn't be as good. So I'm curious, like, what do you miss most, or is there still like lost that, oh, I wish I could go out and have that night again, or does that not even come to you anymore?
I don't know if it's as much about the wild nights, but I think the thing that I miss the most about drinking is like, there's no doubt that drinking is really fun, especially in the beginning, like at the beginning of a night or the first drink or the second drink or something like that. But I think the thing I miss the most is that it's easy. It just makes everything easier. I think it's really easy to go through life like you don't have to think about going to that happy hour or getting a cocktail at that wedding, or just it's so ingrained in everything we do, and it makes chit-chat easier, it makes catching up with people easier, it makes conversations easier, and not easier like actually easier, but just I have to put more work into getting to know people and showing up for things, I think, which is a little bit more confronting. Alcohol is a really safe bet a lot of the time, and it's just not as easy as it used to be.
But so much more fulfilling, right?
So much more.
Like,
fulfilling.
What do these conversations look like at the Whole Foods at Lincoln Park? I mean, what do you guys talk about?
Honestly, it's wild. I mean, I think people get so deep so fast because you're already coming in kind of bearing your soul saying, I'm thinking about this thing that nobody else is talking about, or I'm willing to admit that I'm struggling with this thing that nobody wants to admit or goes so against our cultural norm that, I mean, we talk about anything normal 20-something women would talk about, dating, books, jobs, shopping, etc., but it's more real. Like, yeah. There's family stuff. There's crying sometimes the first night. It's just a level of vulnerability and connection that I think a lot of people crave that they aren't really willing to risk for.
Right. And also, let's name that it doesn't necessarily have to be someone that's in their 20s or 30s. I mean, how many people go home? And I'm not passing judgment here at all, and I'm one of these people. I'm going to have a drink to take the edge off.
Absolutely.
I just had a rough day. I need a drink. Which it's like, yeah, that's what you've been conditioned to do, but there could be a zillion other things that might actually feel a whole lot better than a glass of wine for you. Whether it's working out or actually having, I don't know, some conversation that you normally wouldn't have. It's saying something to your husband, your kids, or whatever, or a friend.
Right.
So, yeah. And then afterwards, okay, now I actually feel great about that, and I've got energy going into my next day.
Right. Yeah. I think...
Just did a sale for you there.
Yeah. Anyway. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Let's tackle the men out there, because I'm sure there are guys that are in the same situation. Yours is a women-only group. Do you hear from men?
I have heard from so many men since I started this group. I think it's important to name that I started this group specifically for women. I think there's a level of connection and vulnerability that is really sacred and can only happen among women. But I have had so many men, probably upwards of 20 something men, reach out to me in the last 6 months wanting me to start a group or wanting to help them or invite them. I've tried to connect as many of them as possible. That's not necessarily something I want to take on, but there are men out there searching for the same type of thing.
Yeah. Which is not surprising at all. All right. For how do people get in contact with the group here, Haley? What's the best way to do it?
So it's on the Meetup app. I don't know if anybody's familiar, www.meetup.com. And if you just search Chicago Young Women Sober Curious, I'm on there, Haley Organizer. You'll see it right there in Google.
Where do you hope this goes? Do you even think about that?
No, I honestly haven't really thought about it. I've gotten so much fulfillment out of being somebody that connects other women and creates a space for this conversation, that if I can just touch one woman on her journey, that she makes a choice that's better for her, then that's really fulfilling.
Well, you guys have been in the Tribune. I've seen some videos, too. Is there any story that you'd want to share from people that you've met there? I know that a couple have been... More, have been highlighted or underlined for what they've gotten out of being in your group.
Yeah, I really think there are women that have come to this group that have stayed sober because of this group, which I think is a huge. I mean, that's a huge win. I think knowing that there's other people out there like you and you're not alone is sometimes the thing that keeps you going.
How old are you?
26.
Congratulations. You're ahead of the curve here, Haley. Thanks for coming in tonight. Appreciate it. Let's do a quick timeout. We'll get your check of news coming up at 9 o'clock, 720 WGN. I don't know if we need to be playing, like, hurricane songs. But Curtis is headed to Florida, and Hurricane Dorian is crashing in. Could hit Florida as a Category 4 Hurricane Center forecast Thursday that Hurricane Dorian could reach maximum winds of 130 miles per hour within 72 hours, putting it at a Category 4. That's the second highest on the hurricane wind speed scale. Sure you're going down there, Curtis?
So far.
What do you mean, so far?
Well, unless American Airlines says otherwise. I mean, our flight's scheduled tomorrow morning out at 7.
Who's going on this trip?
My mom, my dad, my sister, and I. Family vacation.
Your mom, your dad, your sister, and you.
Yep.
And where are you going?
We're going to Disney.
You're going to Disney?
Yes.
Like Disney. Epcot Center?
Disney, Epcot Center, Magic Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, the new Star Wars land there, and Animal Kingdom, all that jazz.
How old are you?
I am 24.
How old is your sister?
My sister is 22.
And you guys are going to Disneyland with your parents. Whose idea was this?
Well, we've done it almost every year for a while now.
You've gone every year?
Not every year, but we've gone the last maybe 5 or 6 years together.
6 years, the Curtis family has gone down to Disneyland. That's not. This is an expensive trip there, sir. I'm glad things are going well.
It's our one vacation, like, every year, every other year, something like that.
Who loves to go the most?
Definitely mom and sister.
Mom and sister.
Dad likes it too. I like it. It's, you know, theme parks, nice weather, go to a few water parks, hang out by a pool, have a few drinks, that sort of thing.
You stand in line with your family to get on a ride?
Well, we get fast passes.
You get the fast pass.
Yeah, because we stay on the property, you're allowed to book fast passes. So we book fast passes.
So you got the fast pass. Yeah, how long do you have to wait with the fast pass?
Well, it's kind of based on like an hour system, so you can book like your spot in line for, like, let's say Space Mountain, and you can go there between 12:10 and 1:10. That's when your fast pass is active. So let's say you're having lunch and you can't make it over there until 12:45 or whatever. You have that hour window to go and check it out.
So you get there at 12:45. I'm fascinated by this. You get the fast pass.
Yep.
You walk in at 12:45. What happens then?
You walk. There's a separate line.
The fast pass line.
Yeah, the fast pass line. You basically go all the way up to behind the other fast pass people ahead of you. Because it's that hour window, you still have other people who also have that same time as you.
How much is the fast pass?
It's included with your park ticket.
Included with your park ticket.
Yeah,
if you're staying on the property.
Yeah, if you're staying on the property. Uh-huh. Why are you looking at me like
that? I'm just trying. I
scratching your beard and giving me
I'm just trying to figure out, like, somehow I feel like this applies, A, to, like, Chicago's looking for money. Maybe we could have a fast pass that applies to certain times.
There is. It's called the express lanes, and it doesn't really go very fast.
Right,
there.
But maybe we could charge for that fast pass at certain times, and then you could be really fast.
There you go.
And then, you know, a lot of what would happen is a lot of rich people would be flying down the express lanes, but then all of a sudden we'd have more money in the fast pass. Maybe Lori Lightfoot's listening right now, and somehow your vacation into the hurricane all ties together.
All ties together.
And we got a situation that we can jump on here. What do you think?
Sounds interesting.
Fast pass. Curtis, what's your favorite ride at Epcot/Disney World? Have you ever seen Krista Flores down there, our engineer who loves it too? She goes to Disneyland, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but she's actually going to Florida about the same time I am.
Wow.
But she'll be in Miami. She'll be in the southernmost part of the state. But okay. My favorite ride is probably Expedition Everest, which is the big roller coaster at Animal Kingdom.
Interesting.
Or Rock and Roller Coaster with Aerosmith. Those two.
Simple question out. Do you like traveling with your family?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Mom, dad, sister, you're happy to... That's a vacation for you.
Yeah. I'm 24. I can't afford to...
I understand.
Go to Europe or anything like that. So for now, I'll take what I can get.
Well, you could get in your Curtis Mobile and drive into, like, you know.
The last like little mini vacation I took for myself was a weekend trip to Nashville.
How was that?
That was fun. We saw the Hawks get smoked by the Preds. And that was a weekend where I stayed at a buddy's place who lives down there. And the only thing that we paid for was basically food and beverages, and that was it.
Okay.
And gas, of course.
This is all tying into my U.S. Open trip, which I've gone by myself.
Yeah.
I've gone with friends, and I've also now I went. This was the second year that I went with my brothers. Now my brothers are 15 and 20 years older than me, so it's not the standard brother situation. Although my brothers are my brothers, and I was worried that get the family dynamic going on in there. But we had a lovely time.
Good.
But I'm just curious. I'm curious here. 312-981-7200. Do people like traveling with family? Like, does it actually feel like a vacation? You're bringing me up here, Curtis.
Yeah.
You're painting a picture of, that's right, I'm going with mom and dad. I get to hang out with my folks. I love it. And
this
I got
my the first time we've been down there during a hurricane either.
Not the first time during a hurricane.
No, we've been down there during Hurricane George when it was at 2001 or 2002.
And you guys clearly survived. You're here today.
Yep.
Was the trip impacted anyway?
It was just rainy. Really, the only thing you had to do was just get ponchos on, but that was really it. Rainy and windy.
Okay.
It was a category one or one category, just above a category two when it made it.
Just so you know, 312-981-7200, the northwestern Bahamas were forecast to get 3 to 6 inches of rain, so you might be wearing that poncho when you get down there. Some areas getting up to 8 inches. Curtis's family is going to Florida. All right. I don't know why I find that interesting, but I most definitely find that interesting. Okay. There was one story that came out today that was just an absolute stunner from the world of sports. And we're going to talk about that coming back here in a second. But people sharing their private life publicly, I give you all the credit in the world, and this particular story is just incredibly vulnerable. And we'll talk about Ryan Russell, who is doing something in the NFL that's never been done before, coming on back here, 720 WGN. See, I don't know if we need to be playing like hurricane songs, but Curtis is headed to Florida, and Hurricane Dorian is crashing in. Could hit Florida as a Category 4 hurricane. Center forecast Thursday that Hurricane Dorian could reach maximum winds of 130 miles per hour within 72 hours, putting it at a Category 4. That's the second highest on the hurricane wind speed scale. Sure you're going down there, Curtis?
So far.
What do you mean, so far?
Well, unless American Airlines says otherwise, I mean, our flight's scheduled tomorrow morning out at 7.
Who's going on this trip?
My mom, my dad, my sister, and I. Family vacation.
Your mom, your dad, your sister, and you.
Yep.
And where are you going?
We're going to Disney.
You're going to Disney?
Yes.
Like Disney. Epcot Center?
Disney, Epcot Center, Magic Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, the new Star Wars Land there, and Animal Kingdom, all that jazz.
How old are you?
I am 24.
How old is your sister?
My sister is 22.
And you guys are going to Disneyland with your parents. Whose idea was this?
Well, we've done it almost every year for a while now.
You've gone every year?
Not every year, but we've gone the last maybe 5 or 6 years together.
6 years, the Curtis family has gone down to Disneyland. That's not it's an expensive trip there, sir. I'm glad things are going well.
It's our one vacation, like every year, every other year, something like that.
Who loves to go the most?
Definitely mom and sister.
Mom and sister.
Dad likes it too. I like it. It's theme parks, nice weather. Go to a few water parks, hang out by a pool, have a few drinks, that sort of thing.
You stand in line with your family to get on a ride?
Well, we get fast passes.
You get the fast pass.
Yeah, because we stay on the property, you're allowed to book fast passes. So we book fast passes.
So you get the fast pass. Yeah, how long do you have to wait with the fast pass?
Well, it's kind of based on like an hour system, so you can book like your spot in line for like, let's say, Space Mountain. and you can go there between 12:10 and 1:10. That's when your fast pass is active. So let's say you're having lunch and you can't make it over there until 12:45 or whatever. You have that hour window to go and check it out.
So you get there at 12:45. I'm fascinated by this. You get the fast pass.
Yep.
You walk in at 12:45. What happens then?
You walk. There's a separate line.
The fast pass line.
Yeah, the fast pass line. You basically go all the way up to behind the other fast pass people ahead of you. Because it's that hour window, you still have other people who also have that same time as you.
How much is the fast pass?
It's included with your park ticket.
Included with your park ticket. Yeah, if you're staying on the property.
Yeah, if you're staying on the property. Why are you looking at me like
I'm
that?
I'm just trying. I
scratching your beard and giving me a
I'm just trying to figure out, like, somehow I feel like this applies, A, to, like, Chicago's looking for money. Maybe we could have a fast pass that applies to certain times.
There is. It's called the express lanes, and it doesn't really go very fast.
Right,
either.
But maybe we could charge for that fast pass at certain times, and then you could be really fast.
There you go.
And then, you know, a lot of what would happen is a lot of rich people would be flying down the express lanes, but then all of a sudden we'd have more money in the fast pass. Maybe Lori Lightfoot's listening right now, and somehow your vacation into the hurricane all ties together.
All ties together.
And we got a situation that we can jump on here. What do you think?
Sounds interesting.
Fast Pass. Curtis, what's your favorite ride at Epcot/Disney World? Have you ever seen Krista Flores down there, our engineer who loves it too? She goes to Disneyland. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but she's actually going to Florida about the same time I am.
Wow.
But she'll be in Miami. She'll be in the southernmost part of the state. But okay. My favorite ride is probably Expedition Everest, which is the big roller coaster at Animal Kingdom.
Interesting.
Or Rockin' Roller Coaster with Aerosmith. Those two.
Simple question out. Do you like traveling with your family?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Mom, dad, sister, you're happy to... That's a vacation for you.
Yeah. I'm 24. I can't afford to...
I understand.
Go to Europe or anything like that. So for now, I'll take what I can get.
Well, you could get in your Curtis Mobile and drive into, like, you know.
The last, like, little mini vacation I took for myself was a weekend trip to Nashville.
How was that?
That was fun. We saw the Hawks get smoked by the Preds. And that was a weekend where I stayed at a buddy's place who lives down there. And the only thing that we paid for was basically food and beverages, and that was it.
Okay.
And gas, of course.
This is all tying into my U.S. Open trip, which I've gone by myself.
Yeah.
I've gone with friends, and I've also this was the second year that I went with my brothers. Now my brothers are 15 and 20 years older than me, so it's not the standard brother situation. Although my brothers are my brothers, and I was worried that get the family dynamic going on in there. But we had a lovely time.
Good.
But I'm just curious. I'm curious here. 312-981-7200. Do people like traveling with family? Like, does it actually feel like a vacation? You're bringing me up here, Curtis.
Yeah.
You're painting a picture of, that's right, I'm going with mom and dad. I get to hang out with my folks. I love it. And
this
hasn't been the
first time we've been down there during a hurricane either.
The first time during a hurricane.
No, we've been down there during Hurricane George when it was at 2001 or 2002.
And you guys clearly survived. You're here today.
Yep.
Was the trip impacted anyway?
It was just rainy. Really, the only thing you had to do was just get ponchos on, but that was really it. Rainy and windy.
Okay.
It was a category one or one category, just above a category two when it made it.
Just so you know, 312-981-7200, the northwestern Bahamas were forecast to get 3 to 6 inches of rain, so you might be wearing that poncho when you get down there. Some areas getting up to 8 inches. Curtis's family is going to Florida. All right. I don't know why I find that interesting, but I most definitely find that interesting. Okay. There was one story that came out today that was just an absolute stunner from the world of sports. And we're going to talk about that coming back here in a second. But people sharing their private life publicly, I give you all the credit in the world, and this particular story is just incredibly vulnerable. And we'll talk about Ryan Russell, who is doing something in the NFL that's never been done before. Coming on back here, 720 WGN. Cubs and WGN TV coming to an end. About 1 month to go on that. It's kind of crazy, right? any rate, all right. We're going to shift things around here because Aaron Levy has shown up early, and he's a very busy man, and he's got places to be, and he's in studio right now. His book is Open, Honest, and Direct, A Guide to Unlocking Your Team's Potential. Now, we're not talking about sports teams here, Aaron Levy. We're talking about you are – how old are you, you young superstar, you?
31.
Come all the way on up to that microphone. There you go.
31.
You're 31 years old. And you've written this book. You're to basically, you started out working in a business, and you saw that there was that businesses were not perhaps operating as well as they possibly could, and you decided to try to seek solutions so people could be better at their job, and then you ended up writing this book. Did I surmise that fairly accurately?
Yeah, it's a decent summary of what happened.
And so what did you learn? What did you learn in the process of writing this book on how to get a company where you've got, you know, maybe you have a company of 25 people and some people are performing and some people are not, and people are afraid to perhaps speak to the people they just want to fire and try to lift them up. Is that basically what we're getting at here?
Yeah, and I actually bring it back to sports a lot when I talk about it. So I think about, you know, Mitch Trubisky. Right, and you say he goes out of the huddle and he looks at one of his wide receivers, Tariq Cohen, and he sees he's not in the right spot. And there's 2 minutes left in the game. And what is he going to do? Is he going to wait 6 months and send him an email or during their end of season review and say, Tariq, you weren't in the right spot there? No, he's going to yell at him and tell him to move over. And
maybe.
Hopefully. Yeah. And Tariq's probably not going to get mad at him because they understand they're going towards a common goal. And so oftentimes we get mixed up in this in the business world of not trying to hurt someone else's feelings or not sure what we can say when someone else will get mad at us or won't get mad at us. And it's like we're walking through a series of landmines. And what Open, Honest, and Direct is about being yourself, being transparent, being authentic, communicating with tact and grace too, but also in a way that moves you and your team forward. So if someone's not doing something that's working, let them know. If they are doing something that's working, let them know so they can do that too.
So let's say you're a manager and you've got somebody who's not doing their job, but they're very sensitive and they don't take criticism well. How do you coach that manager to do they use kid gloves with that person, or is there a strategy that you employ for somebody like that who's probably is going to put up all their defense and be like, no, it wasn't my fault, when you're really just trying to actually help them be better?
Yeah, so there's this research for people who are listening that they can look up. It's Google's Project Aristotle. And what that dives into are the factors that create a high-performing team. And two of the factors, which I think are by far the most important, is clarity and psychological safety. And so as the leader of that team, it's up to you to create psychological safety, a place where you can speak up and not feel like you're going to get made fun of or humiliated or put down. And also clarity to know where you're at, where you're going, and why you're going there. And so when you're able to create that space, then you're going to tell that person that they're not hitting their mark, because that was the agreed upon mark they're supposed to be hitting.
What about just the old school sales? Hey, you're either hitting your number or you're not, buddy. And if you don't, you're out.
I mean,
that's really how business has been done, right, for years upon years. That, listen, if you can't do it, somebody else will. And if the fear of getting fired doesn't motivate you enough to go out there and make that extra 10 dials or whatever it is to get the job done, or if it's not sales, then if you're not going to stay in the office another 3 hours or whatever it's going to take, then I'll find somebody who will.
So there's two answers to that. One is fear is a fantastic motivator. But, you know, it's like when you put a gun to someone's head, they'll do what you say. But as soon as you move the gun away, they're not going to do it anymore. And they're only going to do so much so that they don't get in trouble. And so it's a limiting motivator. And the other thing is given the market that we're in today, they're not going to find somebody else. Unemployment is almost negative here in Chicago. And with the companies coming to Chicago, a lot of the startups growing, it's really, really hard to find talent. And so instead of saying, okay, you're out of here, why don't you coach them? Why don't you tell them what's not working? I often give it the analogy of playing basketball in the dark. It wouldn't be fun if basketball was played in the dark because you wouldn't know where the ball went, right? Did it hit the rim? Did it hit the backboard? Was it an air ball? What's happening? But once you play with the lights on, you get immediate feedback on how your shot is and what worked and what didn't. And so what I talk to managers is telling them it's your job to shine the light on your employees, to let them know where they're where they're hitting the mark and where they're missing so that they can get better next time.
What's your biggest challenge with managers who just aren't great communicators themselves? Like, how do you get them to sort of step into, you know what, I actually probably have to tell this guy or this woman something that they're not going to like, and I'm uncomfortable doing that. But, right? I mean, it maybe the person's, like, really just begging for feedback, but the manager's kind of afraid to, along with your book title, Open, Honest, Direct, just be direct. How do you help that person? Because I think there's a lot that are like that.
Yeah, it's. I think Gallup says 1 in 10 managers naturally have the tools and skills to lead, and yet we
1 in 10.
1 in 10, and yet we put people in leadership positions because they're good at what they do, not because they're good at leading people. Right, the best salesperson becomes a sales leader. It doesn't make a great sales leader just because you're good at doing it.
Right.
And so the first thing that we look for in any of our work with clients is we look to see, does this person actually want to lead?
Uh-huh.
Do they, and it's okay if you don't. There's nothing wrong with you if you don't. If you want to be an individual contributor, you should, and you should be able to grow within the organization. But if they don't want to lead, then they're not going to want to do the work it takes to have that conversation with the other person, or the internal work it takes to really overcome their fears of making someone else uncomfortable for the sake of that other person actually being better. Because sometimes that hard feedback is what that person needs. Because they have plenty of people, friends and family members and coworkers, who won't tell them the truth.
So you go in and you speak to businesses all the time, correct?
Yeah.
You got a team.
Daily basis.
You got a team around you of and what are the questions that you're getting from other companies? If I got some CEOs listening right now, and what type of questions are you getting?
Yeah, the most frequent question I get is, how do I get my group of leaders to start leading and stop doing, to start upskilling themselves and thinking strategically and not just running their teams but leading their teams, which is not just like doing the work themselves but having others do the work.
So they got to that position by doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they rose up, and they know nothing else other than doing. It's being in the office till 11 o'clock, I'm gonna grind it out, I'm gonna write the greatest proposal, whatever it is. They're great at that. And
yeah.
So then what do you say?
Well, it's really limiting to be a super doer. Right, like you get promoted into this position of leading people, and you get people under you, and so you just do their work and do your work, and that tends to, one, burn you out.
Right.
It also tends to frustrate the other people around you.
Right.
And it only can last for so long. Right. You can't just add more hours for every new project that's on. So those people start to realize that there's a breaking point. That
do they though? Because I feel like they'll walk in the wilderness for a long time.
They can. And again, like coming back to the light analogy, we shine the light on that pretty quickly. The opportunity and the potential is you want to increase your productivity by 50%. Have your people do 50% of that work instead of you working 50 or 75% more.
See, I just know so many people who, especially in this industry, they're in the office, or they're. I can't really like say like a media guy, a talk show. It's not quite the same thing, but like a lot of shows, they do. There is a team of people around, and there's like a host that maybe would burn themselves out just nonstop, constantly consuming content until 2 a.m, and then they're going to come back and do it the next day, and then they're irritated with the people around them because they're not doing as much, but they're afraid to take stuff off their own plate because they feel like if they don't, then things are, you're going to be out of control.
Well then who am I? What's my worth? Am I good enough?
Right. Of course.
And those are the questions which are very much focused on individual performance and not on team performance. And so we want to look at the picture of what are we going after here, right? And so that's the organization, and that's their manager, their leader above them, and that's them as leaders thinking of what's the purpose of this team, of this show, what are we going after, what's the bigger picture that we're working towards. That's why sports is one of those that I find to be fairly analogous to business, but it's also just makes it much easier because in sports, like, let's win the Super Bowl, let's win the World Series, right? There's that common goal that everyone can understand what we're going towards and not always question the direction to get there. And when you do see that, you're like, what is this person doing? Why are they speaking out? Why are they, you know, they're not helping the team, and it's pretty obvious. And yet we don't necessarily look at that in the same way in the business world.
What do you think of the myth out there? Maybe I think it's a myth, but there's this whole millennials thing, and they don't want to work, and they're all about themselves. And then, and millennials, by the way, are now like 33 years old. So I don't even know what your what the 18, 19, 23 year olds are called nowadays.
Do Gen Z.
Gen Z? Okay, great. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid 17,000 years ago, we didn't work as hard as kids nowadays. The bar just continues to get raised and raised and raised. There's so much more organization that you talk about sports. Like, there's all these programs that we didn't have, you know, and it's harder to get into school nowadays. Like, I was just talking to someone who said that, you know, people are getting rejected from Wisconsin and they're getting into Michigan. So Wisconsin was like a school that, you know, a kid that's getting, you know, decent grades is going to get into. Now we can't even get into
college, high school. People, I mean, they right. start worrying when they're right. in middle school about what high school they're going to get to in CPS.
Right. If you live in the city and you're not going to go to private school, am I going to be able to test into Lane Tech? All that, I mean, all the stuff is real. So they work incredibly hard, but yet there's this sort of perception like, how do I get these young kids to work as hard? Do you have those questions coming from the people that you talk to?
All the time. It's why are millennials so different? I mean, because when you look at the millennial generation, they are turning over roughly 2 to 3 times more than any other generation has.
As far as jobs are concerned?
As far as jobs are concerned.
Okay.
And so that is causing a problem in the marketplace. And one of the things is, generationally, we are a different generation. We grew up with different inciting incidents, different factors. When we came out of school, it was 2008, 2009. The crash just happened. Our parents who worked at these jobs for 30, 40 years or who saved up there for their retirement, that was all gone, and they were getting fired. There was no loyalty to the employee at that point. And so they asked, where's the loyalty of the employee? Well, we grew up in an era where that wasn't the case. But I also think there's a changing world of work. We're no longer in this Industrial Revolution era where you are on an assembly line checking a part and saying, this part's blue, and that's all you have to do. The type of work we're doing is very, very different. It's thoughtful. It's creative. And so when you're frustrated because your millennial employee asks you, well, why are we doing that? And what's the point of this? It's they need to know because the work that they're doing is creative and it's thoughtful and it's not assembly line work and it needs context. What I want, you've got that might be hard to handle.
Like a flame that burns a candle. A candle feels 720 WGN, Mark Harmon with you till 10 o'clock tonight. We've been around the world and back tonight, it feels like. We had Rick Pearson in here talking about Mayor Lori Lightfoot's speech. We had Haley Shannon here talking about sobriety. I got Aaron Levy in here right now. Open. I've been friends with the Levy family since I was 10 years old. I should know your last name. Open, honest, and direct. Aaron, you're like the youngest Levy, though. I was friends with your uncle, who is my age, and you're like I knew you when you were like 6 years old, and now you're writing books and you're helping businesses. And people are texting in here saying millennials. The book, by the way, is Open, Honest, and Direct, A Guide to Unlocking Your Team's Potential. For this, so this is for you, business people. And we're talking about millennials and their work ethic. And, you know, and you mentioned how they're switching jobs, which I think actually is like sort of it's a good thing in that I am going to find the situation that is best for me. I also think there's part of it, too, where if people are jumping from job to job to job, I think that person eventually needs to actually look in the mirror and realize that, you know, you're actually bringing you wherever you go. And the problem that you had in company A is probably going to be the same company problem that you have at company B and C, because you're unwilling to look at the mirror in the mirror and you're pointing at said manager as that person is not treating me fairly. Do you think that's a fair take?
I think that's totally fair. And it's trying to figure out what the right fit is for you. And sometimes it's, as you said, it's not the surroundings, but it's what do you want? What's important to me? What do I really want in my life? And actually, that used to be the midlife crisis. And now that is something that's happening in your mid-20s where people are starting to explore that question.
I had my first midlife crisis at 30. I quit my job and went to Europe for 2 months. That didn't work. It was a great time for a second. Then, oh, I have to actually come back and get... Not that I wouldn't do that again, but it doesn't solve anything. It just postpones it.
No, and I think one of the things that we talk about is really getting clear on what's important to you. And that comes through coaching. It comes through exploration. And our goal is really to build leaders that are better coaches, leaders that can help their people grow and develop and tap into their own potential. Because when they do, when you find a mentor, or a coach, a boss that you look up to, that's when you stick around. That's when you are more fulfilled in the work that you're doing. And that's really at the root of why we do what we do is what I'm about is helping people unlock their potential. And that's kind of why I'm here on this earth. And, you know, what better way to do that in the workplace?
What's the number one complaint or question you get from leaders who feel like they're, you know, whatever, maybe they're being told they're not doing a great job, and yet they're like, hey, I'm doing my very best here, but for whatever reason, people are not following me, they don't listen to me, I don't feel respected in my role. I mean, do you hear that a lot?
Yeah, I hear that a lot, and it's like, how do I get people on my team, yeah, to follow, to how do I inspire, how do I motivate them? And usually what we hear is, that's what we want to get out of this training, that's what we want to figure out how to do, And we actually have them take a step back and say that the way in which you motivate and inspire people, motivation is not an action. It's an outcome. And we want to look at what drives the outcome of motivation. And what that really is what we talk about, listening with intention, attention. It's actually showing people that you're listening to them and you're hearing them, because most people aren't ever truly heard or seen. I'll give an interesting stat is we think at about 1,000 to 3,000 words per minute, and we listen at about 100 to 175 words per minute. Listening is inherently hard, and we rarely ever practice it deliberately. And so most people just suck at it. And if you could be a little bit better than sucky, then you're going to be setting yourself up for a lot of good things as a leader.
So that speaks to this job specifically, actually listening to who's talking, but it plays out all over the place. I mean, let's go home life. You got your wife or your kid or whatever, and they're saying a million things, and you're thinking about what am I going to do tomorrow, whatever else is on my plate, and you're not there. And like a manager could be hearing the same thing from their employee for the zillionth time, and they just want to get them out of the office. Right? They're not really listening at all. Just do the thing that I'm asking you to do. I don't want to hear anything else. I'm too busy. I can't slow myself down. I feel completely overwhelmed by every task that I have to actually sit there and listen to you. I mean, that's not easy to do when you have that amount of stress on you.
No, I might be talking about this like it's there's easy steps. The steps are simple, but they're quite difficult because they require a changing of your behavior and sometimes a changing of the structure of the way you work, right? If you go meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting,
right,
you're not going to set yourself up for success. We've had leaders who leave our training and we only work on 4 skills in our management 101. And we leave and we say, just small changes. Take a small change consistently over time and you're going to make a profound impact. You don't need to change everything. And one of the leaders in our last boot camp said, you know what I started doing? Is I started ending my meetings 10 minutes early so that I had 10 minutes to like debrief, decompress, write down the next steps, and then think about what I was doing in the next meeting. And simply doing that helped me focus more because I wasn't going from one meeting to the next. And I've been there before where you go from one meeting to the next and you're still thinking about the last meeting and then you're thinking about the meeting after that and then you're thinking about where you're going to get food because you're starving, you haven't eaten anything.
Right.
Right? And and I got to pee at the same time, right? These are...
Did the White Sox win? What's going on with the Bears? Are they going to have a kicker? Is what's my wife cooking for dinner? Am I taking a vacation?
That's how our brains actually function. And so the acknowledgement and the awareness of that and what we actually do is we train you to notice all of that voice and that noise. And actually, it sounds much harder than it really is, but focus on what's in front of you by looking at what's actually just being aware of and noticing your blind spot for listening.
What's your coaching around the devices? Everyone's on their phone. You could be in a meeting, and then I'm going to look at the phone. Who's texting me? Well, this is popping up. This reminder just popped up. I'm sitting here with this person. Are you telling guys you're having a meeting? The phone's got to be flipped the other way so you're not paying attention to the 17,000 things that might be going on right in front of your face.
Mark, even the phone being out is a distraction. Even the phone being there, because you have the option to think about, what if I turned it over and looked at it? It's the same reason, you know, if you have trouble sleeping, you probably shouldn't have a TV or a phone or an iPad in your bed, because when you're tossing and turning in the middle of the night, the first thing you're going to go to is, oh, I have something to do. You probably even shouldn't have a book in bed. If it's a distraction, you have trouble sleeping. And so the fact is, it's a mental distraction. And if the goal of the meeting is to get to the outcome, or is to figure out what you're trying to do, or to brainstorm, well, why don't you spend that time doing that really focused and dedicated? And what you'll find is that people who are super successful and are able to achieve and go after their goals are able to really focus and hone in on their objectives in the moments.
So you're telling me that the phone needs to be 3,000 feet down the block, basically. Because if it's in the drawer, it's a distraction, because you know that if you open up the drawer, the phone's in there, and then you might be checking whatever you want to check because you know it's in the drawer.
When I walk, I mean, the further away it is from your eye line, the easier it is. So if it's in a meeting and it's in your pocket, that's way better than on the desk.
Okay.
When I walk in my house, I put it, I have a little nightstand, I have a little like stand at the front door, I put my phone down there. And
but then you're not connected, Aaron. People could be calling you. Somebody's got to have a meeting. Somebody might need you.
Somebody might need me. We've trained our organization, and we've trained our clients to know that we're not saving lives in our business. I'm not a doctor. I'm not like my brother, who's a doctor, who actually needs to pick up his phone if it's a text message in the middle of the night. We don't need to.
Okay. Adam Schefter needs to pick up his phone.
Some trade's happening. Something's going on.
But it's true. I think that's a good reminder to, if you're a doctor or whatever, you're working sports media, or if you're or whatever the profession is, that you need your phone to be successful at it. Okay, fine. But if you don't, then you can actually create some space, and it'll actually make you be more effective. And it's sort of just an addiction at the end of the day, more than anything else. Fair to say?
Yeah, and it's really hard to get rid of that addiction, especially.
It is.
What's gotten me more now is when I meet with people, I ask them if their phone's up or they're looking at it, do you need to take that, right? Or can you put that away for this meeting? And it's frustrating because people now can just be looking at they'll just, in the middle of a conversation, mid-sentence, look at their watch and swipe at something. And it's just a complete distraction from whatever we're talking about.
I've done it, I think, at least 3 times tonight. I know that I did it at least once where somebody was texting me to ask you this question. So I I'm sitting here looking at the text screens going, and people are texting in right now. Poor work ethics, can't function without devices, that type of, which is that's a knock on millennials, I guess. And then people are asking, when is Trump going to lead his guests to evacuate? We're not going to go down the political.
Oh no, not that route.
Yeah, that's a challenging route. But anyway, the book is Open, Honest, and Direct. You wrote a book. Aaron, congratulations.
Thanks so much.
That's a big-time accomplishment. You're how old?
31.
31 years old, writing books. What's the number one thing somebody's going to get if they pick this up?
They're going to get an actionable toolkit for steps to take to be a better leader of your people.
And what about the people that are not leading? What about the people in the office? Why would they want to read this?
Yeah, to be able to manage up, to be able to get what you need from your boss.
I think that's a huge thing. People don't know how to approach their boss. They're afraid that if they ask the wrong question, or if they come in wanting something, that they're going to lose their job, right? And so how do you tactfully approach, try to get what you want so you're not looking to move down the block to whatever the next opportunity might be?
Yeah, and these skills that we talk about,
these
of listening, asking powerful questions, being open, honest, and direct in your communication, they're skills. They're the skills that, I'm obviously biased about this, but they're the skills that as we move towards more automation and we move towards more things being done for us, they're the skills that computers can't take.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's the one edge we're going to have on the computer that's going to drive that truck faster than you, safer than you, and doesn't complain to management.
It's right. Yeah.
It's all coming. Aaron, great to see you. Aaron Levy is the author of Open, Honest, and Direct. Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks so much, Mark.
All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN. Don't tell me it's the end of summer. I love you, Andersons, but that's a harsh reminder right there. All right. I wanted to just throw a shout out to a guy who I honestly had never heard of before, Ryan Russell. He's been in the NFL for 3 years. He was drafted by the Cowboys in 2015. He played college football at Purdue, boiler up. 1 year with Dallas, 2 years with Tampa Bay, and he's a defensive end. Most likely you haven't heard of him. So he comes out and tells ESPN that he has hid his sexual identity. And he said he had a fear that it could be the end of his career, and he's telling people that he's bisexual. Quote, I rationalized my fear because it was easy to convince myself that hiding who I was made the most sense. The competition is so stiff to stay in the league, and that small mark can lead a front office to choose another guy for your job. So he sat out 2018 with an injury, and now he's saying he wants to, quote, live honestly, and that means being honest with his teammates. Quote, today I have two goals, returning to the NFL and living my life openly. So here's a guy who's battling for a job, no less, and he's putting it out there. Those two objectives shouldn't be in conflict, but judging from the fact that there isn't a single openly LGBTQ player in the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, or the NHL brings me pause. I want to change that. See, what the NFL actually really needs is a guy of huge prominence to come out versus somebody who's on the fringe. And that way it's like you can't get rid of if it was whoever. Give me a top 15 quarterback in the league coming out. That would be something. But I give Ryan Russell a ton of credit. A lot of Curtis, you got something you want to say about that?
I say it reminds me of the whole Michael Sam
thing. Right, it's Michael Sam-esque, and Michael Sam is not in the league. Would he be in the league if he never came out? I don't know. But before I got out here tonight, I just wanted to bring that out there. So all you Boiler fans, you should be proud of your guy, Ryan Russell. Coming up after me tonight is Pete McMurray, who just stopped in the studio. I got a question for you, Pete.
Yes. It's great to see you, man. How's everything? Congratulations. You don't need to invite me to your wedding. I'm busy that weekend, but thank you.
You don't want to.
What's the date again?
You don't want to.
I got something. I got a guy. What?
No, November 30th. It's Thanksgiving.
I am completely out 1,000%. I don't need to get involved. I'll just send you money. I don't need to go to any more weddings.
So if I send you an invitation, will you send me a gift and not come? That's what I want to do.
First of all, you should know something about me. I don't send back RSVPs. I'll send you a text. I'm in 100%. I was in a wedding this past weekend. I'm not kidding. I drove to Charlevoix, Michigan. Do you know where that is?
I love Charlevoix, Michigan.
It's in the North Pole. I drove forever.
It's beautiful up there, though.
And then you get to Charlevoix.
That's where I go to tennis camp, by the way. Go ahead.
They have one taxi.
Yeah.
No Ubers.
Why would you need a taxi?
Because you drink. What's the use of going to a wedding if you can't get boozed up?
Just walk on home. It's not a big town. How far do you got to go?
Well, I did. I walked a mile to and from the reception.
There you go.
But the wedding was 45 minutes away. So you drive from Charlevoix to Harbor Springs. It's like, I'm done with weddings. I don't need to go.
See, mine's right down the street. Lots of Ubers and cabs.
What was it? December 1st? I'm busy that day. I'm busy for the rest of the year from here on out.
You're always busy, man.
God bless. I'll just get the updates on Cochran.
Did you see that that the Bears kicker missed an extra point tonight, Eddie Pinero?
What?
He missed an extra point.
Adam Hoge at 11:05. Yeah. Can't wait to talk to him.
Yeah, we already roped him in at 8:05 right after he missed the kick. I was on the hotline. Call Hoge.
I heard him. He was good.
The guy missed the kick.
Yes.
These things happen. Did you give Jay Cutler? You got season tickets to the Bears, don't you? Section 251?
Yeah, thank you. Right above the time clock.
Right above the time clock.
I'll be there next Thursday, man. I can't wait.
Bears and the Packers.
Oh,
September the 5th. So you weren't the one that gave Cutler seats to the game. How did Cutler get tickets, Pete?
If I saw Jay Cutler, I'd punch him in the neck. I can't stand him. I think he is he's just a deplorable person. Oh, Jay's changed. He's really a nice guy. No, he's not.
Did you hear Hoge? He was like, I don't know why we don't love Jay. There's people out there that
Jay's
say this.
Jay's a prick. He's not a good man. He wasn't nice to people when he lived here, and we're not going to build him up. Just go and live wherever you are and do that cable show that nobody's watching and get out of my face. I never need to see you ever again.
You know, I was sitting there on Sunday night a couple Sundays ago.
Yeah.
And I'm flipping around. I go.
I would never watch it. I would never support him.
I was watching you.
Oh.
You were
on Fox.
You were on The Final Word.
Yeah.
You were staring at me. You were wearing like a cub outfit.
I was wearing my Yeah, my your Cubs suit.
Your Cubs suit.
Let me tell you something. That was 100% polyester. I was sweating the whole time. They had to bring makeup in.
You looked miserably uncomfortable, but yet...
It's terrible. Yes, it was hot.
But yet brilliant all at the same time. Okay, here's my real question for you as I'm just spinning through things.
Right.
You know, I was just in New York for the U.S. Open, which is the greatest sporting event that there is.
Saw Johnny Mack on ESPN this morning. I love him. Yes.
Johnny Mack's the greatest. And
you're a huge tennis guy.
I'm a huge tennis guy. I love it. I can sit there. I get there at 10 in the morning. The matches start at 11. I watch the practice, warm up on different courts. I'm there until 10 at night. I go 12 hours, and I still
wow.
And I still don't want to leave. And then I go get dinner, have a late dinner in New York. Went to Emilio's Bellotto. It was delicious, amazing homemade Italian, like the noodles and the meat sauce.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Then I went to JG Melon's, had the cheeseburger the next night. Or that was actually that was last night was the cheeseburger. And the night before that, I went to Fish, which is the name of the restaurant. It's called Fish. And then I went next door.
What do they serve?
They serve fish. It was amazing. I had a lobster roll. Okay. But then, and I went next door to Johnny's Pizzeria, and I got the large cheese pizza, and I put it underneath the table. I put it underneath.
Gained 15 pounds. You got to lose weight for your wedding.
I did. And then I went to Levain's Bakery, and I got the chocolate chip cookie, which is the greatest chocolate chip cookie.
Wow.
So my point is that New York's better than Chicago, Pete. I want to know your thoughts.
Oh, stop it.
It just is.
First of all, you're on the radio in Chicago. Even if you thought that, you don't say it out loud, but absolutely not.
I'm just an honest guy.
You walk around New York after 10 o'clock at night, there's garbage bags everywhere, and it smells like garbage because they put the garbage on the street. This city is 1,000 times cleaner than New York City.
See, people say that too, like the garbage is on the street, and that's true, and it is nasty. But I don't know if I walk around like I got rats all over where I live by in the old River North neighborhood here, Pete. Don't you have rats in your neighborhood?
There's rats everywhere in the city of Chicago. There's rats everywhere in New York. There's rats everywhere.
Right, same thing.
Chicago's a better city. Stop it. Cut it out.
What about the
New York is great to visit. I was there twice this summer and a few times in the spring.
Who's got a better transportation system, New York or Chicago? It's not even close.
I like the fact that you can drive in Chicago. You can't drive in New York. Where are you going to park? You're going to pay $50 for parking every time you park the car?
And Pete, remind him of something else. Chicago has, although New York gets high marks for its mass transit, there's one thing they don't do.
Yeah?
You can't ride the subway to an airport.
True story. That's a very good point. Although
David Jennings with 15 points for the win. Ding, 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 ding.
You
cannot take the train to LaGuardia.
You can't take it to LaGuardia.
That's where I fly in and out of.
You can't. You have to change from the regular city subway to a separate train to get to Kennedy. It's not direct like it is here. Okay. Get on one train, you go to O'Hare. Get on the orange line, you go to Midway.
Right.
Can't do that in New York City.
All right, good defense.
By the way, did you fly in the LaGuardia? It's like the old Midway. I mean, it's like a shed.
But they're redoing it.
I know they are. I'm going to miss the old because it was such a dump, and now this one's going to be
awful.
Nice, and it's going to be...
No, it's incredible now. they got Shake Shack in there. The place is delicious.
Stop it. Now it's going to be hard to get to, and yeah.